말을.
Hello. It is lovely to be here, in particular for first fortnight. Yeah, because I started coming to Avail in maybe 2016. So I was in Galway first, and then I had a diagnosis of anorexia, and I transferred to Cork. And that was really lonely, I would say, because I was kind of in college and having to start again a little bit. I didn't know anyone, and I used to come up. I don't know how I started coming to Avail. I think my mom told me about it. And I used to come up and I used to sit down and listen to people share so authentically and so honestly. And I used to watch people listen to each other with such respect and care in the way you're all doing right now. and I just felt a lot less alone, and I suppose a lot more grounded, and in the realization that everyone else, you know, has things going on and has things they're preoccupied with. And it's just, it's been really important for me, both as a poet and as a person. So thank you all for that. yeah, so I'll just crack on. And so the first poem I'm going to read is called The Drop Off. And it's about a car journey with my dad to the residential treatment center that I was in Dublin to be treated for my eating disorder. So I'll just crack on. The drop off. Everything's a blur. You don't play Talking Heads, Bob Dylan, talk about work or your iffy stomach. You read the road as if it's encrypted, with what a father should say on a drive like this. Should I apologize for your missed appointments? Unread emails. There is always someone who needs you more. Mostly I'm sorry that I'm not as happy as you raised me to be. I want to ask the GPS the quickest route to end this silence. When we reach the center, you pull up and go straight for the boot. This is what you know to do, to lift the heavy thing. Tell me to take your good umbrella. You drag my suitcase to the door, where the nurse stands with a notepad and clutches your arm. I'll come back soon, you say. But she smiles and says it's better if you don't. So when I was in treatment, I suddenly got really obsessed with like amusement parks, and I kind of decided I wanted to go visit loads of them when I was out. And I think it was just because I was really bored and I just wanted to feel like adrenaline or something. And I wrote this poem called Risk about that, but it's also kind of about the relationships you form in a place like that, which, you know, because people are bored, so they can just be a little bit risky. So Risk. All I want is to be shot into the air by a starship, thrown far from waiting rooms, gurneys, and supervised toilet trips. A pill punched from its dispenser. I get it, she says, interrupting my list of amusement parks I'll visit when I'm discharged. She drags her scarlet nail along her sternum, says, I love the thrill that a belt might loosen, a spring could snap. She shows me how to hide supplements in a cactus pot, to raid the contraband cabinet when the nurse who falls asleep is on. Can you feel it? She asks, placing my palm on her chest, hers on mine. The bumper cars of our hearts stutter and jolt. There was, when I first wrote the book and I was starting to do kind of interviews and stuff about it, and people would ask me to read specific poem, there were poems. There was one poem that I was like, oh my God, I hope nobody asks me to read this ever. And of course, everyone asked me to read it. Because you know, it's the one where it's like, oh, this is a bit like uncomfortable or whatever, especially for me and my mom. So like, it's a poem about us like in a changing room together, which is just like, I don't really want to read it, but now I'm kind of used to reading it. So, and I suppose it's just been relatable for people because I suppose the relationship that women have with their bodies in particular, when having that conversation with your daughter and your mom, it's like so kind of, I don't know, dangerous and awkward and difficult. So this is called Zipping Up My Mother's Dress. Her hands church her midriff. It's a 10, she says. I can't believe it fits. She's been eating raw carrots, counting her steps. What does she want me to say? That I'm glad she's smaller, that she looks great. She used to be a tight 12. That extra flesh was the decade she banned diet books, snacked on almond pastries, and drove me to dietitians and therapists. We revved past joggers, turned up the heat. Thanked Christ I stopped getting up to sprint. At the pharmacy, she waded me through carb blockers and keto shakes. I'm trying to accept that her body is hers, not a fire blanket I step on to escape the flames of my worst years. Still, how can almost losing me not be enough to kill her desire to be small? Has she forgotten the ECGs, the blood tests? Before I speak, her arms slide around my hips. She says she's glad that we can shop again, that she can touch me and I don't flinch. Her heart against mine, the contraction and release of a stress toy. She pinches her belly, asks, will she get away with this? I say, yes, I'm buying. And tear off the tag so she never knows the price. So this poem is about essentially going on the session. So I come from a rural town where there's not a lot for teenagers to do. So naturally, we would just go into a forest with naggins. And this is called Knives We Used on Our Skin. Who did we imagine would pick up our filters, our shattered glass? Our minds were closed buds. In the oaks and pines by the old ice house, we sparked fire lighters. Threw back naggins, cans of cherry cider. We sucked Benson's and mints, had our first kiss, our last smoke. What did we know of a beer cap in a vixen's throat or the stomach of a hare gagged with cigarette butts? All we knew, for sure, was if we drank enough, we could voice the panic attacks we had before maths. The mantras that our bodies were too big, too small, too riddled with spots. We confessed that we watched our mothers dice carrots with the knives we used on our skin and babysat kids by the river we dreamt of walking into. Here we uncapped what was held so tightly, like a sluice trap after so many winters. Our tense jaws, our cramped hearts were held by the earth's nerves, those roots and vines that quietly lowered the pressure of our blood. I did a reading recently and my little brother came and I kind of asked him after, you know, how he thinks it went. And it was with a secondary school. And he said, well, if they came in happy, they definitely all left really sad. So I'm sorry about that. It's good for me to get it out. So thanks anyway. Nightshade. This poem is, I suppose, because I've been quite open about my experience of an eating disorder, it is quite common for people to ask me about treatment, like where do I get treatment, how to get access to treatment, and often the waiting lists are insane, there just isn't the funding there, there isn't the beds there, and like eating disorders are awful, people have to be at a really bad place to accept help, and they're manipulative disorders. So even to admit that you need help is like a huge thing. And then to be told that, you know, there isn't any help is like, oh, grand, cool. So that's kind of, this is kind of what happens when people ask me, where do I get help? Nightshade. She and I circle her apartment block, a cloister. She's terrified to drink tap water, to rub moisturizer into her skin. Sometimes she burns the whorls on her fingertips, wonders what it's like to not exist. I tell her about coloring books, how making a whale pink, a blackbird yellow, can give the illusion she could change things. Do this in the morning, I say, under the penlight of sun, mainly to give her a reason to wake. I show her the relief of ripping up black nightshade, hurling rotten eggs against cement, how destroying something might distract her from how much she wants to hurt herself. All of this is to say that nobody will help until she has climbed down the BMI scale into a comatose state. I share with her the risks I took to be thin and cared for. So this next poem, I suppose, I've been to like a lot of therapy, of course, because I wouldn't be standing here without therapy, in fairness. But also what I used to go to a lot of time, I used to go to group therapy. I used to love group therapy, because I don't know, there's just, again, just that sense of that you're not alone. At least with, you know, with the therapist, they're kind of looking at you and nodding and stuff, but at least if someone else is telling you, like, yeah, I feel that stuff too, it's just really powerful. And I have a lot of friendships from that, sometimes quirky, strange friendships. So this is about one of those friendships. Wednesday's 5:30. Over coffee, I tell you I slept with some guy. You say it's strange I'm okay with touch. I reply, I was drunk. Forgetting your dad, who you don't talk about, but found mangled and sallow as turmeric on the kitchen tiles. You were 4. Instead, you gloat about women you find online, how you pee on their stomachs. When I don't react, you say, isn't there something erotic about urine? You might take one of them to Brazil for a week. Buy 9 of the same watch because you like how they tick, and tattoo your entire arm black. Darkness swallowing you limb by limb. I explain my panic attack at the key co-op. Everything gluten-free, plant-based, organic. I've been trying to learn there's nothing wrong with oats or wheat. You joke we should share a scone. Wait for my shoulders to stiffen and fingers to tremble. I confess I'm jealous of the clavicle that juts from my granny's chest, the gap between my cousin's legs under her communion dress. You nod. You get that. We ignore the ghosts on our backs. Tara, who left for St. Pat's. Jack, with Om script on his wrists. Promise to meet. Same time, same place. My boyfriend often comments that when I do readings, I stand up and act like he doesn't exist, because I'll introduce a poem by being like, "This is a poem I wrote about this guy I was seeing once," and he'll be in the back of the room. So I won't do that this time. And the poem I'm reading is called "Attendance Award," because it's about, I suppose, I haven't been very well for the last few weeks. My boyfriend has been really annoying and forcing me to take care of myself, which is like not very, you know, it's not really, it's just really annoying. Because I'm very stubborn and I tend to work through illness, which, you know, you just end up getting more sick. So this is kind of about that, and I've always been that way from a young age. Because I don't know if when you were in school, if you had teachers being like pissed off at you if you were sick, like, you know, which was really unhelpful. So you kind of just be forcing yourself to be well all the time. And also you were awarded if you didn't miss days, which is kind of ableist, but anyway, attendance award. I willed away a flu, picked chicken pox off my skin, held ice to my fevers, steam to my chills. I'd have done anything for the award that declared I was perfect. Never slept in or missed a roll call, a spelling test, a fire drill. Even now, outside the GP's, my love holds open the door of his Ford with the heat on full blast. He hands me a flask of lemon and hibiscus tea. "Get in," he says, "you're going to rest for the whole week." His tone unkind, ungiving of choice, knowing that to love me means fighting another louder voice. Just last, very last poem, which is called I feel like I just did the thing where I like I'll just do one more stanza. This poem is called "Hiding," and I suppose like I still would struggle with my mental health, but obviously I'm doing a hell of a lot better. And I suppose that's just about that kind of gray. It's kind of about that gray space. Which I think a lot of us exist in, hiding. Mokushla holds a pillow over my face as a joke. This is how we love each other, knowing we can suffocate one another but won't. He wants me to get up, eat sourdough with tapenade, climb Mizen Head to peer into the dark guts of the Atlantic. Hover our ankles over the 50-meter gorge. But I have ruined every cliff walk, mountain trail, by calculating how many steps I can take, how much I can burn. It took so long to learn that I won't die if I sleep in or don't weigh the strain I inflict on the earth. Now all I want is a life of shut curtains and holding the cracked teacup of my body to his lips. The terrifying part is lifting the pillow, letting light back in. Thank you so much. Thank you.